Hello, listeners. Welcome to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH. I'm Don Byrne, and I'm here with my friend and co-host, Andrea O'Brien. Hello, Andrea.
Good day, Don.
How are you doing today?
Doing very well.
So we have an interesting show coming up. We're going to talk to somebody who's going to tell us about advances in technology and how they come together in a business context of one that I really hadn't thought a lot about, which is what are the implications to accounting of artificial intelligence? And maybe they'll mention the two special words that I know you like, blockchain.
No, I don't like those. That's completely, I don't think I'll ever get my head around it. But you know, that's the beautiful thing about accounting. Even it can be disrupted.
Yeah, yeah.
And with all the technology and artificial intelligence going on, I fear that my accounting friends will be out of a job someday. Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a real issue. And I think that's one of the topics that we'll try to explore with our guest, Michael. Do you pronounce Michael's last name Lai or Lay?
Lee.
Michael Lee. So we'll have him on board in a few minutes.
So let me just tell you a little bit about Michael.
Yeah.
So every year, the SBDC, the New Hampshire SBDC, gets together with the entire New England region, and we are given the opportunity to get some professional development. And Michael was a speaker talking about technology and how entrepreneurs and small business owners should be using technology to do that, you know, the heavy work, the work that nobody wants to do around accounting, bookkeeping, and tracking those numbers.
Well, that you don't have the experience to do because you're an engineer or you're a manufacturer and, you know, double entry bookkeeping is not your thing.
Or a butcher or a baker.
Sure.
Or a candlestick maker.
Yeah.
You know. You have to, and yet it's something that you can't ignore. And then, but plenty of people do, and that's too bad. But so Michael was a very dynamic speaker, and I thought that his message was good and that we should share it with our
That's terrific. Listeners. And I think he's somebody who I noticed he's going to be calling into the show. So he's up in Vermont. I see it's
he's in Burlington. Yeah, Burlington, Vermont.
All right. It's an 802 area code. But I think he is not originally from Vermont.
No, he's from Arizona. And I recently traveled to Arizona. And let me tell you, it's very hot there.
Yeah, yeah.
But how about you?
It's nice. I really like Arizona. I happen to. So one of my little things that I like to do when I visit cities is I like to go on ghost walks. I think I may have mentioned this to you in the past.
Nice.
And there is a ghost walk that I went on there in Tucson.
Oh, wow.
And it was the first one they had held in 2 weeks because it was the first time that in the evening when it started at 8 p.m., the temperature had dropped below 105. And they thought, it's okay to walk 2 miles in 105 or lower. But back when it was 110 or 115, they wouldn't take people out. Right. So
dropping like flies. You know, it's one thing to move from Arizona to New England. That, I think, would be a welcomed, you know, maybe I'm wrong. It'd be a lot harder to move from New England to Arizona.
I think it, you know, yeah, maybe. It depends. I mean, I think there are some people, as we see in our community here, who prefer to head south for the winter and really want to avoid the cold. I know you like the cold and you're a hiker. And you get out there and you're an outdoor woods woman, I guess I would say. I can imagine that people like it. The biggest problem out there, of course, is water. Maybe we'll get a chance to ask him about the water problem they have out there because, you know, in the West, all of the old rights about who owns rights to the Colorado River draining into places and how much water they're able to take. And the problem is that the highest, I think I saw a study saying that the most overpriced housing in the United States today is in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is running out of water. And so you may buy a piece of property and find it is bone dry out there.
Yikes.
So it's
Let them drink beer.
Yeah, and that certainly was the way that many people in Europeans and even back to the Egyptians did when water wasn't very good for many years. They did that and they got their protein at the same time. So
Michael, it was a dynamic speaker and he was so knowledgeable about using technology. And so that's so we were lucky. And, you know, that's the other thing. We are lucky because they have busy times of year, these bookkeepers and accountant firms sure. and things like that. So we were lucky to catch him when he wasn't quite so busy.
Well, this is great. Well, with no further ado, why don't we see if we can get him to call in and let's launch the show.
Michael, thank you so much for making the time to talk with us this morning. And we usually start the program by asking our guests, you know, talk a little bit about themselves. And, you know, in your case, tell us why we would choose you to talk about this crazy topic of, I guess we'll call it accounting and artificial intelligence.
Next generation. Accounting?
Yes. So, but first, you know, tell us how you actually, you know, got to the Northeast.
Yeah. Are you an artificial intelligence or are you an accountant? I guess is how we would say.
That's great. Well, thank you guys for asking. Yes, sure. I am a robot.
You're great.
A
okay.
robot right now. No. So I actually got to the Northeast because I'm originally from Arizona, the desert of Arizona, Tempe, Arizona, where my parents were originally Cambodian refugees, and they came to the U.S. in 1981, survived the killing field there. And so I grew up in Arizona, and I got my start in accounting early on at the age of 16. I was working summers at a local nonprofit, and the controller accountant there happened to be my brother-in-law, today. And so at the time, he was dating my sister, and I was working summers for him. And when he left to go get his master's, they gave me his job because he had trained me on how to do his accounting work at this nonprofit. And so it was a small nonprofit, a few million dollars a year in budget. But I basically got my early start at the nonprofit handling all their books.
Let me just ask you a question. Was that a paper ledger at the time or...
No, at the time, it was on an accounting system. It was called ACPAC. It's an old DOS-based accounting system. And if you can remember DOS-based systems from long ago.
Oh, yeah. And, I think my dentist still uses one.
Yes. And some industries still do use DOS-based systems. But that's where I got my start. And so I learned a lot of accounting from my brother-in-law. And then I took some accounting classes at high school and then in college as well.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Arizona State University. Oh. Yep. So I'm a Sun Devil, and so shortly after college, I actually met my wife, who is a native Vermonter from a little town called Swan, up on the border of Vermont and Canada. And I remember first meeting her, and when she told me where she was from, I looked at her like most people in the Southwest and said, you're from where? because most of us can't even name the six states in the New England. We think New England is a state, is one state or one place in the country. So
it's that place full of snow and cold weather.
Yeah, in cold weather, and whoever leaves there, you never meet anybody from New England. You just hear about it, right?
So, right.
So she told me about this little state called Vermont, where she was born and raised, and she was out in Arizona for massage therapy school. And so I met her through some friends, and we got to know each other and eventually got married.
And you've never had a sore shoulder or stiff neck since?
No, never. Exactly. I have never had a socialistic neck since. And so we after a year in Arizona, after getting married, we spent a year, we moved to Seattle, spent about 5 years there. And then we started having children, and like many native Vermonters or people who leave Vermont, you kind of get a call back to want to be near family, want to raise your kids near family. And I didn't really want to move back to Arizona. After you leave Arizona, you realize how hot it is. You don't realize that when you're born and raised there.
Wow.
But you realize how hot it is when you leave. So my blood was not able to withstand the desert heat of Arizona anymore, so we decided to come and be near family in Vermont. So we live in Burlington, Vermont, where we're raising our now three kids. We've had two more since coming to Vermont. So
wow.
We have three little ones. Yep.
So now you have to make the jump for us into artificial intelligence.
Well, can I just interject?
In a few minutes after Andrew's done.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, no, I just want to explain why. I mean, when you decide to have an accountant come and talk, right? I mean,
and it's not tax season.
And it's not tax season. And you're like, I mean, I know some people might be thinking, you know, big yawn. But I have to say that I heard Michael speak at a professional development workshop, and he was the most fascinating accountant who's ever uttered a few words together.
Michael, off air, I'll tell you a joke.
Accountants. I think fascinating accountant is an oxymoron. It's like two words that shouldn't be put in the same sentence.
But it was.
I see.
Yeah, no, and the topic that he talks about, you know, for the younger, you know, I don't want to say the millennials, but for, you know, anybody younger than
us.
I don't know what is surprising anymore with technology, but you have to embrace it. It's no more, you know, QuickBooks is great, but there's so much more about running your business and getting the books and what the books are going to say to you. And so Michael just gave a great presentation on that. And I thought our audience should also have an opportunity to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, no, definitely. I you know, after being in Vermont when I got here, I began doing accounting consulting work as a CFO, as a part-time CFO for companies here in Vermont. And a few years into that, I realized that that cloud-based accounting technology had gotten to a place where I could not only serve companies in Vermont, but I could serve companies across the country, entrepreneurs, startups, and small businesses, leveraging cloud-based technology like QuickBooks Online and other tools that have recently come out within the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, that were leveraging both cloud-based technology as well as artificial intelligence, machine learning. And so, you know, my firm Reconciled It that I launched back in 2015, we specialize in providing online bookkeeping and accounting services for small businesses and entrepreneurs and startups throughout the country. And we do that leveraging tools like QuickBooks Online and other accounting-based apps that exist within the QuickBooks ecosystem. And those tools have been coming out over the past 5 to 10 years, but predominantly in the past 5 years, these tools that have been coming out are leveraging things like artificial intelligence and machine learning to really make the accounting tasks and bookkeeping tasks more automated and efficient. And so where most accounting firms today still are sending a staff accountant or bookkeeper out to a company's office and spending time at the client's, you know, office doing paperwork and taking that paper and putting it into an accounting system that's desktop-based, we're able to serve our clients virtually using these online technologies and take that paper-based process and make it more digitized. And so the technology out there now has been making it easier and easier for us to do.
Right, and you're not the only person doing this, obviously. There are a lot of companies that are moving in this direction. And I wonder, you know, the argument that has always been one of the concerns people have always had about the cloud is a loss of control. You don't, you know, the cloud is a cloud, and the original metaphor of the cloud was developed because it's this large, great unknown. So you really don't know where your information is necessarily. You don't know necessarily who has access to it, and you don't know what security measures are in place to protect it. Do you run into these objections from any clients that are out there?
Oh, yes, you know, definitely, although they tend to be clients who either, you know, haven't followed the trends in cloud accounting recently or are currently set up in a more private environment. So if you think about the cloud, cloud-based technology really is an expansion or an evolution from what you would set up in a private server network inside your office, except now that private server network exists in a distributed form on the internet. So, you know, in the old days or back in the 90s or early 2000s even, you may have set up a private network inside your office, and we use terms, you know, old terms like LAN, local area network, or wide area network, where those networks were basically only accessible by people whose computers were directly connected to those to that network. And then when we got into more wireless technology and broadband technology came out and were more widely used, it opened up the availability to now say, okay, my server or the computer systems that are running these networks and creating the permissions for these networks don't no longer have to exist in a local office or in my direct office. They can exist and on a remote server in another city, town, or country, right? State or country. And so that's when you have basically server IT companies that do managed services that manage these remote servers were popping up all over the country as early as the 90s or even early 2000s. And these firms became really big. Well, the next evolution from that was, well, instead of every company having their own private server and paying for that infrastructure to have a private server that is then managed, and then you also have to pay for your own broadband line, your own infrastructure around that, let's take that server and cut it up into different sizes so that multiple people can be renting servers. And so now you have virtual servers where software is running that server platform and those networks for you. And then you move to the next evolution where you distribute that. And really, we eventually get to the cloud-based systems, and where really what cloud-based systems is a software company like Intuit or a company like Amazon has a bunch of servers. The term uses a data warehouse. You know, they're hosting it in a data warehouse or a server farm, and they're spending the millions of dollars that it's required to update and make secure these servers that are hosting the applications that we run. And so it makes the availability for applications on a wider scale affordable and accessible to small businesses. If you looked at the old technology, it was only the largest corporations that could set up and afford their own broadband direct line to the servers that they controlled and managed. Now that cloud technology is around, that the ability for small businesses, startups to basically spin up applications on the fly is possible. And so, and now that can happen in anywhere in the world. So somebody in China could leverage cloud-based applications that are hosted and served from the U.S., or somebody in the U.S. can leverage cloud-based applications that are hosted and served from India. And then those applications are either redundantly copied or distributed across the world by these companies like, you know, Google, AWS, Microsoft, a bunch of others that are, you know, obviously provide these cloud-based server services to application providers like Intuit. So,
right. But there are companies who are very concerned. For example, if you're dealing business with Europeans now, the GDPR regulation in terms of controlling information, and even Sarbanes-Oxley in the USA Patriot Act have implications where companies are very reluctant. They want to be very knowledgeable about where their information is hosted, who has access to that information, and the whole concern around data breach. I mean, you've lost control in a data breach situation because AWS, somebody penetrates part of their server farm, and suddenly your data is exposed. So, it's not a slam dunk. It still is a decision that management has to consider and make a thoughtful decision about.
Well, can we?
Yes, and no different than when we had to make decisions on where you would host your offsite server, and also, you know, what the security mechanisms of those servers are. You definitely want to vet the companies and applications that are you're using and where those are being hosted, because those are all important decisions you got to make.
And, you know, those are important decisions for a certain size company, because most small businesses who need to do bookkeeping, which is all of them, would never have their own server. I'm pretty sure that wouldn't have happened. And I think it's hard for people in general to trust when they're dealing with someone who's not in front of them. You know, I'm I'm going to share with you my financials. I've never met you. This is what they might be saying to themselves. You know, I've never met you. I'm going to deal with someone states away, a few known that I'll bump into, and I'm going to give you access or show you my financials. I think it might be a hurdle that they have to get over. What do you think for the most part?
Yeah, but yeah. On the other hand, there are other aspects, and I'm sure that Michael will be able to give us even more examples. For example, there could be transactions that relate to medical information, which would fall under HIPAA. And so right. If any of that information became disclosed, even a one-person company could be in, I think the technical term is deep sneakers. You can really suffer. So, I mean, I think, you know, Mike's point's well taken that cloud computing is a well-accepted style of computing these days, but it doesn't abrogate the responsibility of management to take protective actions on their own part to do things. And as he says, you have to be thoughtful and really do your due diligence when you choose a vendor to go with.
Right. And you know, we definitely, you know, so a few things in regards to cloud computing. The reality is, whether you are aware of it or not, whether you like it or not, the majority of the data and the kind of daily interactions you have out in the marketplace currently exists in the cloud, whether you know about it or not. So your bank data, most likely housed in the cloud, because your bank is probably using cloud-based technology to house your data, your banking data, your financial data, as well as take care of redundancies for their own protection as a bank. The stock exchanges, right, in the world are leveraging cloud-based technology. You're probably shopping on Amazon. Well, that is on the internet, and that's leveraging cloud-based technology. All the kind of regular interactions that we do on our phones, our smartphones, people are, you know, the reality is people are have come to accept cloud-based technology, whether they realize they're using cloud-based technology or not. The second one about Andrew's point about trust is the purchase behaviors of both consumers and business leaders are being shaped and have been shaped by cloud-based technology. So people are already used to making purchasing decisions. When you see the shift from car ownership to car leasing to car sharing, right?
Right.
You see the shift from renting hotels versus now the shift to Airbnb, and now users actually renting out their rooms in their own home, which is, you know, the most protected domain one could have, is allowing strangers into your own home. And yet you see this huge amount of people, you know, millions of people basically sharing the use of their rooms and homes on the internet to strangers, basically.
And so bring that metaphor in. You know, do it for accounting. Tell us how you see it.
Right. So the way that the purchasing behavior now has shifted for accounting services, or really for any services where you would assume that there has to be a high level of trust, which there has to be, and a high level of expertise, which there has to be. The consumer no longer, instead of looking at remote or cloud services as having a disadvantage, they look at it and go, hey, I no longer, especially if you're in a small town where there are not a lot of skilled services that are accessible to you or skilled service providers, you can now say, hey, I don't have to be content with just the two or three accountants in my town that I know or I, you know, are not satisfied with or maybe have a bad reputation. I can access really anybody in the world, and I can look for the best-in-class service provider that can provide me the best services. And as long as I do the homework in vetting them through references, through examples of their work, through talking with the actual individuals that run these service companies, then I have the confidence that I can vet them no differently than I can vet somebody that's locally in my town. So obviously there's a responsibility as a business owner that you should have, and I tell my clients this. When you talk with a remote booking firm like ours, you should ask a few questions. You should ask what are the practices that we take internally as an accounting firm, as a bookkeeping online firm, to protect your data, right? What are the systems that we use, and how have we vetted those systems where your data is going to be housed? What are our practices on hiring and firing employees? and how are we protecting credentials like usernames, passwords, bank account information, social security numbers? What are the steps that we've put in place to protect that information so that when you're sharing that business data with us, and invariably personal data, we have that data protected within our firm utilizing the cloud-based systems we do?
I just want to say that it's amazing enough that you know your accounting so well. You also have to know all this technology.
Well, smart, I think that was a great checklist that he just gave us of things to ask people about.
Yeah, no. So. You're listening to WBNH 105.1 Bedford Community Radio, and this is the Business IQ Radio with Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien. And our guest today is Michael Lee. He's the president of Reconciled It, which is a accounting, bookkeeping firm in Vermont.
Leading edge.
Leading edge, yes. Leveraging all the technology to help their business clients.
Good. Great. We didn't mean to break into your flow there,
Sorry.
Michael.
No, not at all.
I just want to ask Michael about Bench. Have you heard of Bench?
Yes, I've heard of Bench. Yes, and many in the industry have.
And they've been out there for a while. Were they first? Were they one of the first to? So Bench is, can you tell us what Bench is?
Well, without being their advertiser, Bench is an online service provider like us, except they also have their own software program that competes with QuickBooks Online. So the main difference between us and Bench is that Bench has built their own software program that you have to use as part of their service, right?
Okay.
So whereas we leverage QuickBooks Online to provide you the service,
we don't have
our own software program to do that.
And, you know, the other I bring up that particular company because knowing where your bookkeeper is, I know this is a little bit, you know, maybe backwards thinking, but I want to know there's someone I can call and it's, you know, at a discreet location, you know, in a general vicinity that if I had to have a meeting face to face, I could. And
when you get the letter from the IRS.
Exactly. Right. Or I don't understand what the QuickBooks is telling me, you know, can you help me out here? And you don't want to get a chat bot.
Right.
So
obviously for different people and different users, the different service provider options out there are great that there's many different options. For us at Reconcile, that we've decided to take the approach that we are only going to use US-based bookkeepers that will be all employed by Reconcile that as our employees, and that we have, you know, we can see their face, we know their name, we know their address. We do provide their ability for them to work from home remotely, and we make sure that they're set up to do so in a secure way. And that also affects our pricing model and how we price our customers and the value we provide. Some competitor firms to us leverage an offshoring model. So they may have a sales staff or a sales and marketing team in the U.S., but everyone doing the delivery work or actually doing the actual bookkeeping work is outside of the United States. So they may be using a bookkeeping services firm in Philippines or in India, and that allows them to significantly lower their rate. And you can pretty much tell based on the pricing model somebody presents if they're using an outsourcing firm overseas or not. Because that's the only way they would be able to make money in regards to the pricing structure they set up.
I think that's very helpful for entrepreneurs to be able to assess if they want to do it online. You know, you have to really, a little bit of buyer beware, I guess.
Yes. And for some people, you know, using an offshoring model for the price, they're okay with that. It makes sense. And they've accepted the security and the fact that their books are probably being worked on by somebody in India or overseas. And no knock to people overseas. It's just you need to be aware as a customer who is handling your data and what precautions or what action can you take if your data is mishandled by that company, and especially by employees in those offshoring centers. If you know your data is being handled only in the U.S. and by a U.S. bookkeeper, then you have the actions and mechanisms in the U.S. to work on and move on with your firm. So with Reconcile, that we have different levels of approach where we assign a dedicated bookkeeper to our clients. And then if they have an escalation problem, they have a manager level, another level they can move up to where that's a U.S.-based accounting manager that they can talk to. And eventually you can move up to me as the owner of the firm. So you want to vet those processes when you're talking to a firm that you might be using.
So if I can shift gears here a little bit, Michael, and as I studied some accounting as part of my graduate studies, and it's a very complex field, some would argue overly complex. In fact, the U.S. tax structure, as you well know, is so complex that you can't even call the IRS to get an answer to a question.
Right.
Because they won't tell you, well, this is the answer, right? So this seems to be something that is well suited to be completely automated and analyzed by computer systems and to some degree eliminate the need for accountants in the future. Is this a trend? Are you concerned about? Do you feel job security with what's going on?
Well, you know, there's two approaches to take. One is to look at this as, like you said, an intrusion on job security or a threat to the accounting profession in the future, or you embrace the change that's happening and figure out a way to stay in the chart in the lead ahead of it. And so we do definitely see disruption happening, and the complexity of the accounting laws as well as the U.S. tax law does help slow down the movement of technology in regards to its ability to automate certain things. We have seen companies like Intuit, creators of TurboTax, as well as H&R Block and others who have been able to automate or make it easier to do individual tax returns, right, that basically DIY the process of individual tax returns. But they've not been able to fully automate the complexity of small business tax returns, especially in regards to S-corps, you know, C-corps, LLCs, any kinds of corporate entities. It's been very hard to automate because of the variety of rules and the approaches you can take to those rules. There's definitely companies working and trying to make those pieces more automated. But the reality is the public, in regards to the tax side, is still very much expecting to work with a professional that understands the tax law. And since we're in a country where that tax law can change every 4 years, just like we saw in the most recent with the most recent administration, where he's basically changed the tax law to be a little more favorable for small business owners, well, that change can't be immediately automated very quickly. So we're seeing definitely some automation, but not all the way. On the other side, for bookkeeping, there's definitely a little more disruption happening from AI as well as the advent of blockchain technology that's being introduced. This idea of an open ledger distributed system completely does away with a large amount of auditing, a large amount of bookkeeping work, a large amount of repetitive work, because blockchain technology facilitates immediate automatic audits as well as facilitates the ability for AI to do automation work. So blockchain is definitely a huge disruption, and we as Reconcile it, and myself personally, have taken upon ourselves to be on top of that and start learning as much as we can about blockchain and how we can leverage it both in our services as well as future entrepreneurial opportunities that we're looking at.
So you just hit the two words that made Andrea light up here in the studio, blockchain. This is a topic of great interest to her. We've had several discussions about blockchain technology, about bitcoins, we actually had somebody on a previous show not long ago who was a chip designer and was telling us about the chips he designed to do his own mining. And we were quite taken by the whole discussion. And she asked a great question, which is, what does it look like when you get When you actually find your coin, how do they tell you? Do you get something in
can
the mail?
Can they animate it? You know, like.
So it's quite good. And this is that is one of the disruptive technologies that stands there. And I appreciate two things that you've really said here in the past couple of minutes. One is that bookkeeping is more susceptible to being systematized and rendered and is more suitable to being rendered to an automation process than perhaps accounting. And I think the other point that you made here, and it was one I was hoping you were going to get to, which is there still is a fair amount of interpretation that can be done, and judgment has to be used on the part of accountants. And so I've always told people that I've worked with who are in small business, you know, one of your key advisors has to be your accountant, because they really can provide you with a lot of good advice and insight into what you're doing and where you're going. Plus, if they have the benefit of not being captive to your company, if they actually have other clients, you know, they can tell you what's going on in the marketplace. It gives you a sense of how others are doing and what are other acceptable practices. So I agree with you. I think that's one of the areas that will continue to allow accounting to survive, which is the interpretive nature and the judgment that the accountant and the business managers bring to making decisions about various aspects of how they record information, what they do, what are good goals, how do they measure themselves, things of that nature.
Yeah, no, definitely. And because reality is, even with all that data being automated, the business owner still has to sit there and go, okay, I've gotten my numbers in a faster, more efficient manner, but what do I do with these numbers now? What's the decision, what's the business decision that I have to make? And no matter how fast and how readily accessible you make those numbers, if a small business owner is not educated on how to interpret that data and make a business decision, well, then that's no different than if they were waiting for that data for months, right? And right now, or for weeks or for hours or minutes. So an accountant really needs to shift from being a service provider to an actual knowledge provider, right? So they need to take the knowledge they've gained in their education and their experience working with all the clients that they've worked with and take that knowledge and share it and it really become true trusted advisors to the small business owners they work with.
Well, they have to interpret the numbers. They have to help the business owner interpret the numbers. And that's something that during the presentation that I saw you give, you mentioned the ability to, I think you used the word stack technology.
Yep.
So could you talk a little bit about that and what that does for a small business, how that could help?
Yep. So a stacking technology, you know, the approach that we've taken to reconcile that is, what are the technologies that we can stack together, or known as a tech stack? What are the technologies that we can stack together as a online services firm that would standardize the way in which we serve our clients and allow us to facilitate a very efficient bookkeeping process as well as reporting process for them? And then it introduces to the client the idea of taking their internal processes and that are outside of bookkeeping but have a connection to it and creating standardized tech stacks that allow them to scale. So a tech stack allows you both, one, to know and define where the data or information that's being generated for your business is going to be housed, but two, it allows you to then automate, standardize, and train for scale your employees as well as the processes and workflows that are running your business, so that when you grow, you know that this is the stack of technology that I have implemented and put into place that all talk to each other, that allow me to run my business efficiently.
And that give you, that actually provide answers. I think the example I'm thinking of is that there's a technical software that helps you, do cash flow projections. And it's tied to QuickBooks.
Yes, there's a variety of tools out there. One of the tools we looked at recently was cashflowtool.com. And it allows you basically to take the financial data that you put together in QuickBooks Online, and as long as it's clean data and you've got a good bookkeeping firm like us, updating that data correctly, then cashflowtool.com provides a very powerful way for you to look at the cash flow data and tell you whether or not you're going to be running out of cash, you know, what your burn rate's like, and the levers that you need to pull in your business in order to make sure that you're running operationally efficient from a cash flow perspective.
Yeah, and that's just a good example of, at the end of the day, accounting systems really provide, I like your term of knowledge, of providing the information that managers need to make decisions. The accounting spreadsheet isn't going to make a decision for you, but it enables you to know, gee, can I start that new project? Do I have the ability to expand? Gee, I was thinking of opening another office, or I was going to hire some other employees. You know, what is the opportunity to tie all of that together? But you then have to meld that with other systems like a sales forecasting system. Will I have sustainable revenues to allow me to support things? You know, what kind of cash flow can I expect to be generating looking forward, knowing what my current burn rate is? You know, things like that. That's really where the value of having good, accurate information and being able to do some of this modeling is just so really critically important to a manager.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yep. That makes sense. And that's why, you know, it is really important to vet who you're working with. Are they, you know, is the firm you're working with looking at data that same way? And are they able to provide you that forward-looking insight when working with them?
So do you see a movement to decision-making being made by AI systems in accounting? Are they going to be making some of the small underlying decisions eventually and coming up with recommendations that will then be reviewed? Or what is the state of the art? And are there any, anybody doing leading-edge research in this area or cutting-edge products in this area that are noteworthy?
Well, there is definitely small steps towards the ability to help you make decisions. I think that there is a reality of liability that a lot of companies want to stay away from in what happens if that decision is made.
You anticipated my question.
Yeah, exactly. And the result of that is negative for the business. So I think more so that through the use of AI and machine learning, that you'll see software systems, and we see that today. There's actually small signs of it within QuickBooks Online, where there's actually a little assistant that's called the QuickBooks Assistant, where you can actually ask it questions about your financial data that's in QuickBooks. And they are into it, and QuickBooks is working on an AI that will basically give you a little bit of advice around that data of what could be done. There's also other apps in the QuickBooks Online ecosystem that take your data and do benchmarking compared to industry to show where you may have rooms to improve what you're doing in regards to, let's say, your accounts receivable turnover, your inventory turnover cycles, your AP turnover cycle. They have the ability to measure that and benchmark and then give you some advice related to that. But I would say that until they're able to remove themselves from a liability perspective of what the implications would be on following that advice, they may shy away from overtly offering, you know, this is the route you should go or have to go, and allow advisors like us to take the bulk of that liability when working with our customers.
So you're listening to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH in Bedford. And this is Don Byrne and my co-host, Andrea O'Brien, and we're speaking to Michael Lee, who is telling us all about the next generation and what's going to happen with accounting in the future. And I think has paid painted a very interesting picture for this industry.
Michael, I came across something called the Everyday Entrepreneur. Is that your blog? Do you have a blog?
No, we do have a blog. Reconcile that has a blog, but I think what you're referring to is a monthly Facebook Live video series that we launched a month ago, where we're interviewing on Facebook Live once a month for now an entrepreneur that we either work with as a client or that we've run across in our journey as a service provider that we find interesting and we want to share to our audience.
Right. So this is very indicative of the kind of technology today that many people are using, which is, you know, this whole idea of blogging and setting up and, you know, giving actual testimonials of people who are users really adds to the credibility. And there's so much information you can get out there. I myself subscribe to various podcasts, and I tell you, I just don't have enough time during the day to get through all the things I'm interested in, and they queue up. In fact, that's how I fall asleep at night, is I turn one of these things on and I listen to them as we go forward. Yeah. So that kind of technology, more and more that presence, I think, is the way that people are moving forward. So yeah. So
definitely. You know, if you think about creating credibility and creating trust, this is definitely one route that we take to show that we're a great, you know, a service provider that can be trusted, but also that we work with normal everyday, what we call everyday entrepreneurs, normal people like you and me who are passionate about their service or product that they're trying to share with the world.
Sure. Yeah.
It's so difficult for the an entrepreneur who does the thing that they do so well, whether it's running a restaurant or, you know, a traditional business or something else. And they, bookkeeping, just, it's one of those things where people just don't like, they don't want to do the numbers. They really.
Well, it's interesting you say that. There was a question I wanted to ask Michael, which is, how much do you find you have to educate the entrepreneur about accounting? I think a lot of the experience we have here in the General Bedford area are entrepreneurs who are coming from technology, a lot of STEM graduates, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, going out into the business world, and they seem ill-equipped to understand the other parts of business. So is you know, do you also have sort of a second hat that you wear as an educator?
Yes, I'd say on some level, both me and my whole staff, as we work with entrepreneurs, we're doing some level of education. And really the focus is mainly around not, you know, debits and credits per se, but on how can they understand and look at the financial reports that they're receiving, and how can they know, you know, how can they know that the reports they're receiving are accurate, as well as what do they do with them? You know, what business decisions can they make with them, and, you know, what this information provides them in regards to insights about their business and how they're running it. And so we do provide that basic level of understanding and have to do that education. And we do that through both, you know, the one-on-one coaching that we have with our clients, as well as general education that we do online, blogging, videos that we do, things like that nature.
Right. I actually teach some classes where I teach courses in entrepreneurship, and people don't understand even what, you know, a letter, you know, what a line of credit is, you know, and how do you get a line of credit, and what's the value of having it, and when should you get it, and what is a reserve, and things like this. And those are all very important issues, because there are sometimes, as I have admitted, I have had months that the calendar would tell you there's only 30 days in the month, but those months sometimes have had 31 days for businesses that I've run. So it just happens every now and then. It goes forward. So looking forward, where do you see all of this going? What are some of the trends that we're dealing with, and what should we be expecting in the future? I mean, I alluded to before that I think there's going to be, at least from my standpoint, some level of integration with things like Salesforce management. And we hear a lot on advertising about human resource management systems. Again, a wonderful topic to be outsourced, because deep expertise is required, but it's not the kind of thing that you necessarily want to have on your staff. You know, the old strategy of you outsource what is non-critical to your mission and you insource only the stuff that is. So do you see some interesting trends developing, or is this still too early?
I think at some level we're definitely in the early stages still, especially in the U.S. The technology has been embraced, especially things like blockchain, have been embraced more widely outside of the U.S. because they've seen the transformational ability of technology like blockchain to increase acceleration of their economies, especially if they're competing against the U.S., who we dominate as an economy right now. So there's definitely early days in the U.S. I think that you're going to see more automation. You're going to see more disruption in the areas of blockchain and its ability to begin opening up industries that traditionally have been closed. And you're going to see more and more service providers have to shift or basically morph from becoming transaction providers to knowledge workers and advisors as well.
Do you think that's
going to be very interesting?
Do you think that blockchain is going to help eliminate fraud in this area?
I think the blockchain has the ability to do that. Now, it definitely depends on the players that implement it and how it is implemented. But in its very nature, you know, how it's built is built. It's meant to facilitate the removal and help decrease the ability for fraud to happen. So,
yeah, I mean, I think this is really one of the interesting aspects, and we've even explored in some of our other interviews how this is one of the offsets to the fake news trend that's out there. You know, you can actually validate who said what and when they said it. Can't validate whether the news is accurate or not, but you can at least trace it back to the origin of the person. So that's, you know, that has real value in terms of just traceability and auditability of various things. So, I mean, blockchain is a critical technology. Yeah.
Right. And that's, you know, that's why we have today, we have authoritative bodies or independent sources that do audits and do audits of various kinds. And we tend to trust those independent bodies, but we're also learning that we just, you know, recent news report I read about KPMG in the UK, that the regulatory body was saying that KPMG's audit reports in the UK were not worth trusting. They were completely a mess. And so there's definitely human error as well as human preferences and intentions that are in play in the current systems that we have set up, where that those things would be removed in a technology that's leveraging blockchain.
Yeah, all very, very interesting. Let me ask you about some of the other technologies that are out there. You mentioned a little bit before about how you're using video, but really more in a passive mode. Are you seeing online discussions with clients taking the place of other kinds of discussions? And are there other technologies that are coming into play, or are they not quite there just yet in terms of an impact on the accounting industry?
Well, one of the things we're seeing is if you guys have ever used a tool like Slack, which is an internal collaboration and communication tool, it's like, you know, internal instant messaging, and it replaces the need for email. We're seeing more and more clients who are using Slack like we are internally, where we're able to share a channel with each other and leverage Slack to communicate with our clients instead of leveraging email.
What's the benefit?
We're also seeing the increase. Say that again.
What would be the benefit?
The benefit will be is that emails become a really big burden for many professionals who are trying to isolate and concentrate the amount of work they're doing. And so Slack allows us to isolate the communication with this client to one central place where they can do quick questions and ask us quick questions and do quick things that you normally can't be done or is burdensome to do over email.
I see. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, just a quicker pathway to direct communication instead of a phone call.
Yeah.
Right. But you can do it 24/7 across all kinds of time zones. So that's the value of such things.
Right.
Right. Right. And you know, think about email as being email is really, you know, a replacement for snail mail. But if you think but it's not a replacement for instant messaging, whereas Slack leverages the idea of instant messaging and allows you to centralize that in one platform. And allows team members to then concentrate their conversations around different topics. And that's what, you know, we're seeing a lot of our clients already using Slack and want to leverage that with us in direct communication.
I have one question for you, Michael, regarding QuickBooks. Just, I get a lot of questions from clients. Should they use QuickBooks for the self-employed, or should they use QuickBooks for small business, or should they use the disk, or should they use the subscription service? Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, it really depends. They need to talk to a service provider like us to analyze what their needs are. And so QuickBooks Online has a variety of options, as well as there's other accounting options on the cloud as well as desktop-based that are available to small business owners. So it really depends on what industry they're in, what their use cases are, and that's where talking to a trusted service provider makes sense.
Okay.
Good. Well, we're almost at the end of our show here. And wondering if you have any final thoughts. Are there some things that we should have asked you about dealing with the future of accounting and artificial intelligence or any other technical aspects or just in general, what do you see the business climate being these days that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I would say that, for your audience, in the Bedford area or anywhere else that's listening, that leveraging technology, especially online, will help them serve a customer base and opens up customer base to them that they may have never considered. And so like us, here in Burlington, Vermont, I've got employees all over the country. I've got clients all over the country. And we're leveraging technology that is housed all over the world. So, I would encourage your listeners to consider if they're thinking too small or limiting business potential because they're not thinking about the opportunities that cloud-based technology can afford them.
So we all need to virtualize.
Don is, Don's a techie, so he's just sitting here with a big grin.
Well, Michael, thank you very, very much. Please tell us again, if people wanted to reach you and your firm, what are the best ways to do that?
Yes, they can go to reconciledit.com. That's reconciled with a D, it.com. Or they can go to Twitter or Facebook and find us, reconciledit, at both places. And if they want to reach me directly, they can email michael@reconciledit.com or call our number, 802-242-1352.
You probably want to give that again because you did it pretty quick.
802-242-1352.
Right. And you have a website, as you said before, that's probably also a good place to get some information about the variety of services that you offer and things of that nature, I would guess.
Yes, that's a great place to go and talk. And then obviously they can call the office directly, and I'm happy to talk to them as well as anybody on our staff.
Well, that's great. Listen, thank you very much. This is a very interesting show, and it really does give an indication of how technology is beginning to have an impact on even sort of the pillars of business like accounting, areas that you didn't necessarily think would undergo large amounts of disruption and advancement, how the technology really does come in. And I really do appreciate sort of the checklist you gave us in terms of what to look for and how people can go about doing their due diligence. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
We're at the end of our show here, and we've just gotten some very valuable advice from Michael here at Reconcile It.
Michael's going to like this advice also.
Right. Yeah, I think he will. So, I always turn every week to my friend and colleague here, Andrea O'Brien, and say, Andrea, as the local business advisor for the Small Business Development Center, headquartered in the University of New Hampshire Manchester campus here, do you have any thoughtful advice to give to our clients?
I do.
Would you be prepared to share that?
I'm ready. So, listening audience, remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.